All right. So my name is Arshad Kudrowi, and let me just say in words who the people are who are working on this. So the work I'm presenting today is work with Ashish Orpe, who's a postdoc who works with me, and Salome Siowashi, who's a graduate student who is also working on this project. So this problem I'm going to describe today, I've been interested in for a number of years. And what is new about this, and that the reason why I'm talking about this, is this index matching technique, which allows us to say a little bit more about this friction problem and perhaps may reach a better understanding of this problem, and that you can be the judge of. Okay? So I'm going to mostly focus on this particular problem, which is, imagine you have a slider on a granular bed, and you're measuring the friction of this object. Okay? And if I have time, I'll mention a little bit about grain flow inside a silo and the diffusion which occurs in that system. All right. So let me just motivate this problem, which is sort of complementary to what Bob was talking about in the previous hour. So here, let's imagine that there is some sand, gravel, or whatever on the road, and you are braking on that. All right. So if it is a very thin layer of sand, then you know you slip, all right? But as it becomes thicker, the question is it more slippery or is it less slippery? Okay, so that is the question. So here is a top plate. This is the top of the slider. There's some granular material here, and there is a bottom substrate, okay? And as we drag this across and say, let us change the number of, as we drag across, we ask, what is the friction that this encounters, and how does it depend on the number of layers between these two surfaces? All right. So this is a little bit different than the previous experiments which have been done by Satoru Nasuno, for example, which I was involved with in Jerry's lab, and then carried on further by Wolfgang Lozard, in which essentially a very deep bed was used. All right. So here, what we're going to do is, for the next 20 minutes, focus mostly on what is the friction encountered during motion. So I'm not going to go into what's the force required to start motion, how does it come to stop, and so on. All right, so just to remind you what the experimental situation is, so we have essentially a tray, all right, filled with glass beads, on which we put a little slider, all right, it's about 100 grams or so, it's fairly light, and that is being pushed with the help of a little spring. So it's a classic spring rock kind of system. And then one can vary the thickness of this granular bed here, all right, and so on, and measure what's going on. So one just measures the deflection of the spring using a little sensor. And then from the deflection, one can calculate the force which is required to move this slider across this plate. All right. OK, so what we are going to do next is measure what's the friction as a function of this bed height. All right, and then what we're going to do is next also visualize how the particles move around as this is going on, as the slider is moving. Right, okay. It can do anything it wants. So it's just imagine it's just a plate, okay, just as big as your palm, essentially, which is on this granular bed, and it's being pushed, being dragged. So yeah, that was a subtle, we have to do some subtle adjustments to the slider itself. You have to place the weight such that it doesn't sink in too much, doesn't ride too much, and so on, and essentially remains flat, all right? But it's essentially unconstrained, it's just being pushed, so it can do whatever it wants. So yeah, we did this with pulling, and essentially the same problem. Yes, in fact, we thought, we pulled it this way, we pushed it this way. Pushing is what we did originally. And we pulled, we thought that would be more stable, it turned out to be less stable. But essentially, what I'm going to discuss is independent of where we push and pull and so on. All right? But for essentially, you can imagine, and I will show you some movies later on, and you can judge for yourself. Okay, so the question we are asking again is, if I change the surface, all right, so if I have a smooth slider, the surfaces are a rough slider, okay? And as one changes the number of layers, what would be the friction measured? So let me just show you what I mean by a rough boundary condition. So this is just a picture of the plate, which is in which the beads have been stuck randomly, as you can see. Just here's a G of R, which has a single peak and then rings. Okay, so no secondary peak and so on. So this is just a random preparation of the surfaces. All right, and so we're going to use such a rough surface and Combined with a smooth, by which I mean optically smooth glass plate of the same kind, all materials are of the same kind, and ask what does the roughness do. Okay, so here's the sort of protocol. So one just places this this plate on the rough granular bed, pulls, so therefore the spring deflects, all right, reaches a maximum, so you can associate it with the static friction if you like, and then it begins to move. We stop, hold it for some time, and then pull it again, and this is the region in which we do all our measurements. So this way we sort of pre-shear it to some extent, we have a well-defined sort of hold time to have well-defined initial conditions, and then we measure how much, what's the friction in this region, right? Yes. Sorry? Yes. So let me step back. So this is a spring block system in which you can have stick slip motion, you can have continuous motion, and just for simplicity, here we're going to focus on the continuous motion regime. All right. So that is why, as long as I pull, or as long as Salome pulls, the slider continues to essentially move with a constant velocity with some jiggling, as you can see. All right. Right. That's an entire new topic. So there again, there's some precursor, postcursors that the slider slides for a little time and moves around. Yeah. Rearrangements occur for some time. Okay. Incidentally, you might think that little peak there is a noise, but it's actually a real peak. That's the static friction. All right. So here is the sort of the first piece of data that I'm presenting, which is sort of interesting. Okay. So here we are measuring the friction. So friction here is simply the weight of the material, weight of the slide, the friction. Excuse me. The force that I measure divided by the normal the force. Excuse me. The weight of the slider. That's all I mean by friction here. And that is plotted against the number of layers between these two plates. All right, so the plates are rough, and then this is roughly corresponds to one layer, two layer, three layers, up to 10 layers. After 10 layers, it's essentially saturated. Okay. Zero height is exactly this, where there is no particles in between. All right, so I'm going to ask what if you have two surfaces which are sliding past each other, what would be the situation? And then as we increase the number of layers, how do you go from solid to granular friction? This is a topic which confused me a lot. Sorry. Essentially monodispersed within 10%. Yeah, and as you could see from the picture, these are, you know, $3 a pound glass beads. Okay. So this is the piece which is the most interesting. So as soon as you add a single layer of beads, if you like, the friction drops. Okay. So it's around 0.4 or so. It drops to a small value. It remains up to two layers small, and then slowly increases and then saturates after 7 or 8 layers. Okay. So again, you could think this as a sort of ball bearing effect, and so on. But is it really that or not? Is this something I'll sort of explore? In this case, yes. This would be, if I have fewer particles here, less than a layer, this would be sort of continuous. Yes. But when you have less, if I change the boundary condition to be smooth. If these two are smooth and I have less than one layer, then it becomes extremely slippery and friction drops a lot. Right. So the surface matters. No. All right, but again, all right. So then one can try and ask, where does this value of 0.4 come from? So let me just ask the n equals 0 case. All right. So why is this around 0.4 for glass on glass sliding? How does it compare with if these surfaces were smooth? So to do that, what we did was just changed three different combinations of surfaces. So you have rough on rough, or rough on smooth, or smooth on rough. Okay. So in this case, what you get is rough and rough is around 0.4, but as soon as you have both surfaces, or one of the surfaces being smooth, then you drop to essentially the friction for glass, which is around 0.1 or so when sliding. Okay. So this comes from essentially the roughness, and then as one increases the number of layers of the particle, then this increases and saturates for the rough top surface, it increases and saturates to roughly the same value, but if the top surface is smooth, then it increases, but then remains essentially small. Right? So it comes. So you get higher friction if the top surface is rough, but not the other way around. Yes. So the Galilean invariance is only true for this here. Okay. For the other cases, there's gravity which splits. Gravity. So there's gravity in this problem. No, no. There's G's in this direction. Right? Okay. I need to hurry up a little bit. Sorry. All right. So then you can understand these values reasonably easily by just assuming, okay, you have a rough surface here. You consider the fact that when you're pushing this block, the normal force now increases not because of the weight, not only because of the weight of the material, but of the slider, but because of the force that you're applying. Okay, so you can do a little bit of high school physics here, and then you can ask what is the effective friction for these three different surfaces. And so if depending on the angles and doing some averaging, you can essentially explain it. I don't want to go into too much detail, but essentially it comes from this idea that if you have your fingers this way, it's easier to slide this way than it is to go this way. All right. But the question is, why does the friction increase and saturate? So that is the question. And there, using these particle imaging techniques, you can say a little bit more. All right. So here, what we do now in this case is that we just take the tray, fill it up with a fluid. All right. And this fluid is not any fluid, but one which has the same refractive index as the glass beads that we use. All right. So this has been, so if you have sort of attended the workshop a little bit last month, we had Jerry Gallup, for example, talk about this technique and so on. And so we have adapted this for this particular problem. So we have essentially a laser sheet which shines essentially in the middle of the slider. So if you imagine if that's the slider, we're looking at a plane inside, so it's away from the sidewalls. And then we can essentially, by just using some optics, look at those beads which are deep inside the bed. All right? So when we do that, so here is a movie, for example, when there is one layer of particles. So this is the top plate which is sliding on a smooth plate with a layer of particles in between. Right. Or if you have, say, seven layers, then this is how it looks. Okay. So then you have essentially a very disordered-looking material. So this was also a bit of a surprise for me as an experimentalist. Usually I'm used to looking at these granular materials at the surface. And they look much more ordered than they are when you're looking at, or rather, inside plane here. All right. So you can see that it's being sheared deeply. Things are moving. And what we're going to do is use that to understand what goes on. So here are some experimental details which you can look up in the notes later on. First we have to check that the fluid that we added has not changed the problem. All right. So when you have the fluid in here, whether it's dry or wet, essentially you measure the same friction. All right. So you still see the same dip and saturation to the large value as when the system is dry. Okay. So we're looking at the same problem. All right. So now let us look at the density profiles to get some intuition as to what is going on. So if you have one layer, then it's peaked, all right? But if you have three, it's again layered. This is what it's showing. This is the density as a function of height. And then as one increases to five layers or so, it's not as layered, but gets spread out at the top, right? On the sliding surfaces. So next, one can sort of, again, try to get some more intuition about this problem by looking at the velocity profiles. Here, one sees that slip essentially occurs at the top when you have one layer. The particle, or the one layer particle, is essentially stuck at the bottom, whether it's rough substrate or smooth substrate. But as one increases the number of layers, the shear profile gets more spread out. Okay, and as one increases to seven, there is still a difference. But by the time one goes to 10 layers deep, there is no difference essentially in the signature of the velocity profile. So this is the velocity profile normalized by the plate velocity as a function of height, and whether it's smooth or rough bottom surfaces, essentially one gets the same velocity profile, all right? And this sort of essentially exponential decay. But that doesn't really help us explain why the friction increases as one increases the number of layers. So to do that, one can sort of, again, track the particles as a function of time. So if this is one layer, all right? So this is, we're tracking particles in the layer, all right? So this is essentially constant at a constant height. If it's two layers, essentially each particle which is being started here essentially at the same height, but as one goes to four layers and so on, then they start to diffuse much more vertically, right? And by the time one comes up to seven layers, they can cross across the planes in the shear domain. So that essentially gave us the first clue as to what may be going on, why the friction for essentially one layer is smaller than when it's deeper. Okay, so again, just to remind you, this is the movie here in which as the particles, as the top slider moves past, you see these particles which are just going in and out of the plane. They don't roll. So this is not, the decrease in friction is not because of rolling, all right? But essentially these particles move in and out. The same thing happens when you have n equals 2. The particles, again, mostly moving in and out and not getting shear as much in the forward direction. But as one goes to n equals 7, then you have the particles, again, locked in place. All right, so the particles, the top slider has to move these particles through a larger distance to move ahead. Okay, so the idea is that basically that the particle, as it's being pushed on the top, will squeeze particles up into the regions in between. All right, and that fills up the gap in between the top slider and the granular layer itself. Okay, and that one can sort of characterize by measuring the difference between the height of the surface on the top to the layer here. So that's delta z here, plotted as a function of number of layers, and that decreases. All right. So what is going on is that the particles are getting squeezed onto the top layer, and the particles, as the slider passes the particles over here, they avoid, and that increases the friction in between the two surfaces. So that is basically the idea behind why we think the friction increases as one increases the number of layers. So, all right. So I think I have maybe 3 minutes. So, yeah, okay. So I'm going to switch topics and go into, again, using this internal imaging technique to look at silo flows deep inside the silo, as opposed to what we have done is at the surface. All right. So here we are again interested in asking, how does the particles diffuse away from the sidewalls? Because if you are tracking particles at the sidewalls, there is a problem in the sense that particles cannot come out through that plane, and one wants to visualize how a typical particle inside will diffuse. So to do that, we have a slightly different system. This is, you can think of it as like a snow globe in some sense. All right. So you have we have a chamber up here and a chamber down here, which is separated by a thin slit. We fill up drains inside here, all right, along with the index match fluid. And as because of gravity, the grains fall down. And we are visualizing a plane here. Let me start the movie as it goes by. It's actually moving. It's just very slow. All right, so we can visualize different planes by just moving the laser sheet in here, in and out of this plane. And track the particles using a high-speed camera if necessary. All right? So in this case, the question we are asking is, how does this particle, for example, diffuse? What's the packing around it away from the sidewall? Okay. So here, this is, for example, the velocity field in such a silo. It's convergent right at the bottom, but it's essentially plug-like at the top, so it's essentially shear-free. Or if you can pick some other place in this diagram, then you can find a different shear system. Right? So first, let me ask, what does the sidewall do to the problem? So these are the velocity profiles measured here at a constant height, all right, at different distances from the front wall. So this is, for example, 5 diameters away from the front wall, 10 and 20, 15 diameters away. Right? And there is clearly an effect of the front wall on the system, at least to 15 diameters. Right? So you can actually feel the presence of the of the front wall through quite a large distance, it turns out. So that's an answer number one. If you ask what is a typical particle doing at depth, you can again plot the distribution of the steps that it takes. All right, and so for a short step, all right, the 10 to the minus 4 seconds or so, then you get a peak. All right, and this has these huge tails, which corresponds to, we interpret this as stage breaking. The particles take large, some very few large steps. But as one increases the number of time step over which we are measuring delta x, then it essentially crosses over to a Gaussian distribution. Okay, so these are some of the sort of statistics we have gotten to, where we, again, by measuring the kurtosis, one can show that at short time scales, there is some cage breaking phenomena which can be characterized by the kurtosis, for example, which, as one increases a normalized time scale, will become smaller, will become zero. Diffusion is observed. So this is sort of work in progress, and I'll summarize here that basically one can visualize the particles inside a 3D system, and these particles have essentially a structure which looks very different than what you see at the surfaces. The surfaces have an effect at least 10 or 15 particle diameters away from the sidewalls, more will be along the way shortly, I guess. So, thank you.
Question?
Yes, Michelle. Right. So you can ask. What I've done is essentially shown data where the friction, measured friction, is essentially independent of the fluid. So if I, for example, if I pull the slider 10 times faster, you can see an effect of the fluid. All right. So, but when it's slow enough, what happens is this time you have to estimate is the time that it takes for two particles to approach each other and touch each other versus the time it takes to go across. And so in our case, we are in a regime in the speeds that we keep to where that time is smaller than one. And as soon as you go over, we can see that the friction actually increases. So one can smoothly go over from a regime where here it's essentially rate independent, which is what I was showing you within the experimental error, to where it's clearly we can see rate dependence and fluid effects are important. In the second case, I'm not so sure. What we need to do next is change the flow rate. So we need to change the flow rate and ask what happens in that case. But clearly, there is a boundary effect. The grains are sliding against the sidewalls, and there is friction associated with that. So it's not as plug-like as one would think it is. So for example. So this, again, I didn't go in detail. This is the velocity going downwards as a function of distance along this way. So if you look at 15 diameters away, there is a boundary effect. This comes from here. It's essentially flat and then going down. So at least through 10 particle diameters from the sidewall, you can see a small effect. It's 10%, 15% or so. But you can see the sidewalls come in. So not only do they come in from the sides, but from the front and back as well. So.
But I mean, even in minor effects, there might not there be some.
Right. So again, these the drainage, the flow rates we're using is where Stokes drag is small. The lubrication forces, as I said, do not, is again such that the time scale over which the particles go past each other is smaller. That's all one can do to tell you an estimate. Whether it really corresponds to when this is dry or not, well, I think we can only say that after changing the flow rates and so on. Right. So I found that too complicated to think about. So what we did was we just went to the steady state where we are dragging for some time, and then in that situation ask what happens. We can. I'm just saying we can study the entire regime. It's just for thinking about this problem, we focused essentially on the steady problem, steady motion problem. But yes, we can go backwards.
Where is the boundary between steady state and non-steady state? Where certain kind of velocity speed all over.
So okay, so you're asking what's a stick slip to continuous regime.
Yeah,
so
when you start to reach point where the actually where the faster, slower time scale stick slip.
Right, okay. So where it's an order of magnitude. So, for example, the speed with which we are pulling right now, that's fine. We've changed it by a factor of 5, and essentially we see the same friction, same velocity profiles. But we increase it by a factor of 10, we can clearly see the friction increase, it turns out. I haven't shown you here, but the friction actually increases. And there is an effect even on the velocity profiles. So by making the slider go 10 times faster, you can start getting interstitial effects if you like. So here I just focused on a regime where, then order of magnitude, and again, that can be investigated by this technique. It's just for simplicity, I just focused on the simplest.